Ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning and welcome to the earnings conference call of EFC India Limited for Q2 FY25. We have with us today Mr. Umesh Shahe, Founder and Managing Director of EFC India Limited, and Mr. Nikhil Bhuta, Whole-Time Director of EFC India Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing the star then zero on your touchtone phone. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Nikhil Bhuta, Whole-Time Director, to give his opening remarks and discuss further on Q2 FY25 performance. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, everyone. Hi, I am Nikhil Bhuta, Director of EFC India Limited. I would like to extend a warm welcome to all of you for joining our earnings conference call today. We greatly value your ongoing interest and support in our company. In today's call, we will review our financial and operational performance 30th September 2024. We will also highlight key strategic decisions made by our group and share our outlook going forward. For quarter two, EFC India Limited has achieved impressive financial results, with consolidated revenue reaching approximately 171.08 crores and an EBITDA of around rupees 84 crores and PAT of rupees 36.56 crores. For half year ended 30th September 2020, EFC has achieved impressive financial results with consolidated revenue reaching approximately rupees 276.36 crores and an EBITDA of around rupees 133.59 crores and PAT of rupees 52.33 crores. These results underscore our resilience, strategic focus, and the management's unwavering commitment to driving the company's growth. The breakdown reveals that the rental segment generated approximately rupees 89.20 crores, accounting for about 54% of our total revenue. In comparison, the D&B, the design and build business, contributed rupees 77.24 crores, representing approximately 46% of the total revenue till 30th September 2024. At EFC, we create synergies through our dynamic workspaces under brand EFC, Sprint, and Big Box. Additionally, we offer exquisite furniture through 8 Design Industries Limited and provide meticulous interior designing services on a turnkey basis under our company, White Hills Interior Limited. Starting from the managed office business sector, we have significantly enhanced our capacity in this quarter by increasing the leasehold area by around 175,000 square feet, adding over 3,600 seats across 4 centers in 4 existing cities. We have set a strong foothold in 8 cities in India, covering about 2.4 million square feet under management. We have now total 61 sites under our management across these 8 cities in India. The total seat capacity has crossed 50,000 mark. In addition to the concluded transactions, D&B division has got an additional order book of more than 70 crores in hand. One of the largest deal wins that the D&B has successfully secured during this quarter is a contract with the TCS of rupees 18 crore plus. In the furniture and furniture manufacturing division, we have successfully completed our first ever order post our commencement of commercial production 28th September. With the order book being strong and the furniture division is poised to achieve much better in the coming quarters.
Sorry to interrupt, sir. Could you please come closer to the mic and speak?
Sure. With this, I thank you all, and I now open the forum for question and answer session. Steve, you can please open the forum.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sahil Sharma from Columbus Capital. Please go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to congratulate the management. It's quite remarkable performance. Like, especially the board meeting for results was for 5 hours from, you know, 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. And then to attend the conference call at 9:30, it clearly shows your dedication to the business. And it's reflecting in the fantastic performance in our, you know, best ever revenue and profits. And most importantly, the cash flows, which have really improved in the first half.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Sahib.
Yes. So my first question is, sir, first of all, I wanted to understand the seasonality in the margins, just to understand why it is that our margins are typically the lowest in Q1 and then highest in H2, Q3 and Q4. And, you know, how is it tied to the business development cycle through the year?
Sure, Mr. Sahil. First of all, thank you very much and thank you for joining the call. With regards to your specific questions, I'd like to, you know, explain to you that, you know, the first quarter is the quarter when generally all our, for that particular financial year, the new sites that we kind of have identified, those will add new seats for the company, will get under construction during this period. So these are the sites which we have taken from the landlord on leasehold rights. And then obviously we will do a fit out at those sites and then they will come under development. So generally if you see in the first quarter, the expenses, because you know all the standard expenses, maybe except for the rentals, would be on the higher side because the site will not have come for occupation and they will come for occupation during the later half of the year, the later half of the quarter. And then if you look at those seats, they will come for full occupation in the forthcoming quarters. So obviously the seasonality is relating to the way the development cycle happens. So that typically all our development for a particular financial year happens in quarter one and quarter two. Quarter two also, you know, there is a substantial development, but then also the benefit in quarter two becomes is that because there are quarter one sites which have become fully live, will become fully available for billing during the quarter two. And whatever sites which have come up for, you know, development during the quarter two, they would be partially available naturally. And this trend will keep increasing in the ongoing quarters, let's say quarter three and quarter four onwards. So I think it's not about the seasonality rather, but it's about the way the development happens in each site and the way they come up for occupations and how the billing happens to them. So the build-up happens over the quarters, and accordingly, the profitability, income, everything builds up over the quarters, please.
Understood, sir. Sir, my next question is, I wanted to understand the general receivable cycles for all the segments, which is rental, design and build, and the furniture business, what we expect. Because we could see that the receivables have come down from 120 crore in Q4 FY24 to, you know, 60 crore now around in Q2 FY25. And it would be nice to understand the normal receivable cycle, and also request if possible we could share the breakup for the receivables either now or in the next balance sheet update.
Sure. I mean, with regards to your request for sharing the breakup for receivables for all the different segments, we will definitely take that note and we'll show that as an independent piece of information. With regards to the receivable cycle in general for all three verticals, with regards to the vertical for rental business, the receivables are generally less than 30 days because what happens is, you know, we generally receive the receivables in arrear and maximum of the clients would pay you during the first half of the month And then there are a few clients who will probably come a little later. So, I mean, if you take out average, it is around 15 to 30 days maximum on the rental revenue side. On account of the design and build division is concerned, design and build division, it runs around, average is about 90 days, because what happens is, as you know, we have discussed in past, that from the date we get a contract and the date we fully execute the contract and the final payment is released to us, that period goes from zero to roughly around 180 days. You know, the day the PO is received, then the designs are approved, then we go into execution. Once the executions are going on, then there are, you know, running bills which are submitted and the running bills which are approved, and then at the end, when the PMC or the client really approves the final work that has been delivered, and then they process the balance retention money that they have kind of kept under the contract. With regards to specifically your question about why the receivables was larger in the financial year ended 31st March 2024, again, the major reason was that, you know, we had been doing this business for now close to 2.5 years. And if you receive that, you know, it needs some time for us to establish ourselves in the business, create our own credibility, create our own standing, so that we are able to serve now large customers like TCS and like Coforge of this world. And earlier years, obviously, we had to, in order to remain relevant in the business, we were also taking contracts which were even smaller in size. When I say small, means that, you know, which are around 10,000, 5,000 square feet development. Now I'm in a position that, considering the kind of work that I'm able to kind of attract, I'm in a position to do much better, you know, contract values, where I'm able to do more than 20,000-25,000 square feet per contract. So what that means is that I'm then dealing with much more organized players, where the cash flows and the fund availability is much more organized than, you know, what it is available with some of the unorganized players. It's not the question of non-recoverability, it's about just the timing. And that kind of had made that recoverability, the cycle increased a bit from 90 days to, let's say, 120 days in the last financial year. But this financial year, there has been great improvement, and as you can see in the results, and this trend will generally continue going forward. With regards to the financial division, also it's a little too early to say, but typically, there also the receivable will remain between 60 days to 90 days. Quite a bit of business will happen on an institutional level. And that business, when once a business happens with large institutions, you would appreciate that the receivable cycle, they would always prefer minimum of 60 days, and sometimes they go up to 90 days as well. So that's where the entire receivable cycle works for us, Mr. Sahil.
Understood, sir. Last question from my side.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Sahil. Could you please come back in the question queue for further questions?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to answer questions from all participants in the conference room, please limit your questions to two per participant, as there are several participants waiting for their turn. The next question is from the line of Manohar Rao Yadav, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good morning on the wonderful set of results. My first question was, sir, I wanted to understand a little bit on the SMREIT side, sir. Like, now that we would list a subsidiary and the owners would be the unit holders of the REIT, so will the revenue recognition happen on the books of EFC, or that revenue would directly go to the unit holders of REIT and, you know, we get the PAT and the margins increase? And also, is there any scope of, you know, recognizing the revenue from the furniture and DNB section, because now the asset would be owned by the unit holders of the small aggregate?
Yes, Mr. Manohar, thank you so much, and thank you for joining. With regards to the REIT that you are referring to, first of all, as you know, as you may know, that the SM REIT that we are forming and registering right now with the SEBI, all the assets that will be acquired under the SM REIT, they will be independent and they will not be having any direct link to the assets that our company owns. So what will happen is that means that we will be adding new assets to this, a a manager to the REIT. Since under the SM REIT, the concept of sponsor and manager has been merged. We, as also the sponsor and the manager, we are supposed to contribute 5% of the total requirement of the fund for acquiring those assets that we were acquiring under the SM REIT. Now, out of the total assets that we have acquired, the revenue would definitely go to the SM REIT, and it would be registered under the books in the SM REIT. But the management fees will come to us, which would obviously somewhere equivalent to the kind of margins that we are making under EFC. You've got to appreciate that obviously since the assets is owned by the REIT, then the assets revenue will also go to the REIT. But as far as we are concerned, we will be, and to ensure a complete transparency, we didn't want to create a structure where the asset is leased to us and then we manage and then we pay only to the rental to the REIT. So the way the structure is created, that the entire revenue transparently needs to go to the REIT. As EFC, from an EFC standpoint, the asset under management will increase, because in earlier, if I'm managing, let's say right now I'm managing 2.4 million square feet under REIT, let's say we have acquired another 50,000 square feet, another 100,000 square feet, that will be added to the overall asset under management, and it will add to my bottom line, because the bottom line would remain almost the same for the services that we offer to the REIT. With regards to our dividend from the REIT, it would obviously proportionate to the investment that we make to the REIT, which will be 5% as a company that we're going to meet. So that is how the structure would work. With regards to the DNB division and the financial division, both these divisions can separately and obviously will contribute in development of the assets wherever and whenever so required. Generally, because under the REIT, we will have to take already a rental yield generating asset. That means that those assets would already be furnished and those assets would already be kind of occupied with the right type of furniture. But yes, obviously, the asset would require repair maintenance, asset would require, you know, refurbishments, asset would require replacement of the old and, new age furniture, and that would obviously be provided on a competitive basis by our other divisions to the REIT. I guess I have kind of answered your question, Mr. Manohar.
Yeah, my second and last question, sir, is, when I see the industry, sir, I see most of the competitors working under the managed aggregation model, where the landlord is a part of, the occupancy. They get based on the occupancy because they are doing the capex. But I see our company very unique here, because majority of our properties are on a straight lead model, you know, where we are giving them a fixed rental. So prime facie, the managed aggregation looks to be a more, a safer model, because the downside is protected. So why we as a company have strategically decided to do the straight lease model instead of the managed aggregation model?
Yes. So Mr. Manohar, at the outset, I mean, most of the companies typically in our sector would work on a straight lease model. The revenue share model is not very, something which is prevalent. Yes, there are a few companies which are in the market today, and they are obviously working on the on the revenue share model, and we can also work on that model, but we have in past used such models and have faced certain kind of difficulties, which primarily the difference of working styles, difference of expectations from the landlord, and giving a very larger share of revenue to the landlord in compared to the amount of risk that we are taking. You've got to appreciate, Mr. Manohar, that let us say, even if I'm doing under a managed aggregation model, I am supposed to commit contractually to the landlord, number one. I am supposed to commit a minimum fees to the landlord, minimum guarantee amount to the landlord. So what difference I'm making is that a bit of delta, which is, let's say, hypothetically, I'm giving an example to you, that let's say a particular property is going to cost you 100 rupees a rental under the managed aggregation. You might be in a position to commit, let's say, 60, 70 rupees as a minimum guarantee, and balance 30, 35 rupees as an upside which would come later. And that 30, 35 rupees would not be the fixed amount. It would be as a percentage of your revenue or your profitability. That would make the actual cost of your property going up from 100 to 125.
Because naturally, a landlord with whom you are sharing the risk and now he is bearing the risk, he is not going to give you at the same price at which he would have otherwise given on a straight lease. So it is a two-edged sword. If we don't have confidence on the market, we don't understand the market, we don't understand the micro-market where we perform or where we operate, then it is better that we go for revenue share and even account for this little bit of risk that we are taking. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you are anyway doing an NG, you are anyway doing a contractual commitment to the landlord. You know, it is not a case that one fine day you can just simply say to the landlord that, okay, fine, sorry, I'm not able to fill the place and I'm leaving, you know. So, I mean, if you look at the commercials, you look at the contractual terms, in our opinion, yes, one can argue that there is a minimum guarantee, but there is a delta, which is, you know, we are covering by way of revenue share. But then on the other hand, I would definitely like to, you know, bring it out to them that delta is hurting well to the company, because then it is taking away your margin. Because if your cost increases substantially on the rental side because of the managed aggregation model and the profit sharing model, then your profitability at the bottom would certainly and severely get hit, because there is no other place for doing the efficiency building and operation efficiency would be only in two-three place where, you know, where you can control those costs. So I think that is what one has to appreciate, and we are confident of this model. We have been working with this model for more than 10 years now. We've been, you know, our sales teams and our marketing team is strong enough to be able to maintain an average occupancy of around 90%. And we strongly believe that we only take or add as much seats or properties that we feel that we will be able to continue to occupy them and sell them with a 90% plus occupancy. And lastly, most importantly, as you know, that more than 65 to 70% of the business is with big corporates, large corporates, which kind of are committed for a longer duration, so that my risk, which I'm exposing myself with the landlord, is getting equally, you know, taken care by these large contracts where I have 5-year contract with 3-year lock-ins and 4-year lock-ins. I hope I've tried to kind of explain.
Thank you, sir, and again, congratulations on that, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Yash from Stallion Asset. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to understand, so I think in your balance sheet, you've got 247 crores of loans for first half, and, you know, in your current assets, I just wanted to see, understand what is that?
Yeah, so the loans is primarily that we have taken to acquire the property that has been acquired by the company. So we have taken lease rental discounting facilities and the terminal facilities from the bank to acquire the properties. So what has happened is that what this means is that right now, let's say if I'm paying rental to the, when we see an opportunity where the EMIs become equivalent to the amount of rent which I'm paying, plus minus here and there a bit, then we try to kind of acquire those property on our books through a lease rental discounting. Because what happens is that at least here, if I keep paying the rental, I'm not building an asset. Here, by paying the EMI instead of paying the rental, I'm at least building an asset on my book. That makes our company's the balance sheet stronger. That makes our company's ability to, you know, withstand any, you know, downside stronger. Because, you know, when you own those centers yourself, your ability to manage them and your ability to kind of stand in the difficult times becomes much better. So those loans are primarily towards the, you know, you may know that there are 4 floors that we owned at Medisoft IT Park in Pune, and then there is, which is about 100,000 square feet, and then we acquired 40,000 square feet at Vakrewadi Pune recently, as we announced in past. As always, 180,000 square feet has been acquired, so this under this lease rental discounting model, and that is largely the loan that is, which is there on the books of the company.
Got it. And I think in the last call, we have mentioned that, you know, our guidance is 350 crores, north of 350 crores for the year. So do you would like to revise the guidance given the strong performance that we've got in first half?
350 crores, on account of the rental you're talking or on account of the overall performance you were referring to?
No, I think this was for the rental, but you can tell me if you have any plans for the overall, including both the businesses.
No, I think the business is doing really good, and the way the trends are, and it has been in the past also, that quarter on quarter, you know, the business is really performing, and the order books are on hand for both the divisions, the DNB and on the furniture division. And on the rental division, as you know, it's pretty linear, so the business is doing well with the seats getting added, seats coming up for occupancy. The business is growing, and it will continue to grow in a similar fashion. I mean, in terms of guidance, yes, we do stand by, you know, that we will be able to achieve around 70,000 seats by end of this year. And, you know, we will be able to achieve at least, if not more, 100%, you know, improvement in our, you know, performance in the Whitefield division as well. And naturally, in the furniture manufacturing business, this is the first year. So we are certainly looking forward that we, you know, we kind of capitalize and really build the, you know, the business, the way the factory looked magnanimous in that. If you look at the factory, the way it is built and the way the entire infrastructure has come up, we are really hoping that it will deliver whatever all of our expectations have been over the years.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Vineet from Chris PMS. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Vineet.
So my question is with respect to the guidance. Like just now you told that by you will be reaching 70,000 seats by the end of this year, right? In the Q2 you are adding 3,000 seats. So how are we planning in the next half of the year? Like, will we be adding 20,000 seats?
No. So 3,000 seats is adding in the capacity this financial year, this quarter. And it is also going to get better because, you know, there are certain properties which are already been identified, and one large property which is, you know, one single property which is identified and which will come up for fit out in the third quarter. It is going to have more than 5,600 seats in a single center. So we have, you know, a couple of such centers already identified. We were already reserved and booked, which is coming up for fit out. So we will certainly be able to already have the visibility, and that is how we are talking that we will reach about 65,000 to 70,000 seats by end of the year. Obviously, all the 70,000 seats would not come up for occupation during the third and fourth quarter. They would come over the period. But what we are taking a guidance is that by end of this financial year, as on 31st March 2025, we are expecting to touch this mark of anything between 65 to 70,000 seats. And that's the guidance that we are still committed and stand by right now.
Okay. Sounds great. My another question is with respect to the segment-wise economics. Like, can you explain me economics in individual segments, and also for the furniture segment, can you tell me if we have any order book pipeline, or how are we looking? Like, it's been 1 month, right? 1.5 months since it has got operational. So
correct.
Yeah, yes.
It's been about a month now, and the commercial production has started, and obviously the things are picking up. You know, the team has really worked very hard to kind of deliver the first order within the first quarter itself, and then they are also in the process of building up their order book into different business verticals that we are working on, and the order book is certainly looking pretty promising. And we are, as we have earlier mentioned, that are targeting that we could achieve anything. I mean, the estimates and the projections that the sales team has given is that we would definitely achieve anything around 60 to 75 crores of revenue for the furniture division. With regards to the margins that you're talking for the segments, both the rental and the D&D division, we have discussed in past that the rental division typically on a central level we have a margin of about 3%, and on a on a corporate level, it is about 25%. While in terms of the TNP division, average margins comes around 17-18%. But some, you know, the division or the contracts where we have, you know, a lot of difficult work to be carried out, like say where we are doing a contract for laboratories or research centers or, you know, any other contracts that are developing office infrastructure, which is pretty competitive, the margins improve significantly, which is more than, you know, around 24-25%. I mean, this I'm talking obviously the average numbers, and that's what the broad margins are for both these verticals.
Okay. And with respect to the outlook that you shared, like 100% growth in DNB segment, and what was your guidance with respect to this rental segment?
So rental segment, as I've explained, sir, that we are expecting anything about 65,000 to 70,000 seats. We would certainly maintain our seat rate at 6,250 minimum per seat. And you know, right now, as you know, that we already have 50,000 seats. So you are talking about 50,000 seats as already available for occupation for the entire next half at this rate, and the balance another about 15,000 to 20,000 seats, which will get built up over the next 6 months' time. So on an average, let's say they would come for occupancy at about anything between 40% or so of the total seats. Because on average, because they will come up for occupancy over a period, right, over the next 6 months. So that would be the broad number of seats that would get achieved, and the rate that we are talking about is about, we will certainly maintain at least 6,250 per seat, and going forward, the rates would increase because now on average rates per seat for the new seats getting added are on an increasing trend. So, yeah, that's the broad guidelines, sir.
Okay. Thank you for answering.
Welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahil Shah from Crown Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good morning. Sorry to press you again on this guidance thing, but I believe in the last quarter, you had said that you were looking to, you know, double your revenues in FY25. So is it still intact, like, for the company overall? And in quarter one, your margins dipped quite a lot to 45%, which you've improved to 50% in quarter two. But you've also done around 55 to 56% in one of the last year quarters. So can we expect the same going ahead as well?
In terms of target, yes. I mean, obviously, we are trying, pushing our best, and, you know, we are trying to achieve the targets which are set. As you can appreciate and understand that under the DNB and the furniture sector, not that 100% is in our control, that we'll be able to kind of replicate or achieve whatever has been set, targeted for. But yes, we can only commit to you about, you know, what order books on hand, and we believe that with the order books on hand on every quarter, we'll certainly be able to achieve very good results for the DNB sector. And also, similarly, since the furniture sector has now become full-fledged operational for that sector as well, with regards to the rental, it is pretty linear, as I have explained in my, you know, previous discussions. And, you know, going forward, you can certainly at least expect a full revenue for 50,000 seats, and obviously partial revenue for the new 15 to 20,000 seats which are going to be getting added. We are very aggressive. We are really working hard on the targets, and hoping to achieve what has been set at the beginning of the year, sir.
Okay, and manufacturing, the trading of furniture, how much is the, what percentage is it part of the revenue mix?
So as of now, it is insignificant, as I said, because it started just on 20th September. But, by end of this year, I believe it would certainly be around, at least if not more, but around 15% or so. Year on year, it will definitely get improved, and the target is that it will actually, all the three divisions would at least do an equal business of 33% each, you know. But this financial year, I presume, based on the targets and the estimates, the furniture division, manufacturing division would contribute around the 15% to the total turnover.
Okay. And lastly, the average rate per seat is what right now? And you were saying that you see a trend of increasing. So by what percentage you expect it to be at the end of the year?
So if we are seeing the trend in the new centers that we are adding, the average rates are increasing beyond and around 6,500 per square feet. But you know, if you look at the average overall rate, it is remaining around 6,250, because you understand that the previous seats which have been added were sold in and around this rate. So the average still remains around 6,250. But with the new seats getting added more and more, and they are getting sold at a higher rate of 6,500 upwards, we'll be able to, you know, improve the seat rates, hopefully by at least, when you take out the average, by end of this year.
Okay. Got it, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ankur Kumar from Alpha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my question. Sir, I actually started following this company recently. I wanted to understand about the margin guidance and for this year. As in, Q1 was a little softer on margin side and Q2 has bounced back. How should we look at second half for this year? And sir, next year also, if you can please comment.
So, you know, as we have always maintained, sir, the quarter on quarter, the margins you will see different, primarily because the building up of the seats and the building up of the, you know, margins on the business that we achieve on the other divisions like the D&B divisions and the furniture division. You know, once the seats are getting built up, obviously, and once all those seats are getting coming for occupancy, the revenue and the better occupancy rate would give you better margins naturally. So there is an incremental rate, which will obviously average out around, as I explained to you, on an annualized basis, at anything about 30% on the central level and 25% on the corporate level. But that's the kind of margins that one can really estimate, and that's what our targets are always, that we estimate for a particular center, keeping in mind the day they come for occupancy, and from that day, if you can consider it on an annualized basis, then that's the kind of margin that you kind of, you know, work around. As I've explained to you in my previous questions, that this betterment in the margin largely happens because the more seats have come for billing purpose, more seats have come for occupancy purpose for the entire quarter. You know, even if they come for billing purpose for, let's say, only 1 month of the entire quarter, it doesn't make too much of a significant difference in the margin. But when the seats come, so obviously all the seats which have developed in the previous quarter, which is operational in the previous quarter, will come for full billing for the entire upcoming quarter. So naturally the upcoming quarter's results will go to get better and better than the previous quarter from the rental revenue perspective. But overall margin, as I've explained, if you look at it on an annualized basis, that's the kind of estimates, and that's the kind of margins that we at least make our sales teams and our operational team to work at, which is about 30% on a central level and about 25% on a corporate level.
Sorry, sir, but last year and in this first and second quarter, aren't the margins like 40-45% reach?
So as I said, for a particular quarter, there would be such kind of a situation. If you annualize the profitability for the last year, the average annual profit for the last year was 15, net profit, I'm saying, not the EBITDA level, after taking case of interest, tax, depreciation, everything, the net profit was around 15.76%, or around 15%, I mean, roughly, broadly. So I mean, that is the kind of margins that you generally estimate from, you know, our businesses on a combined level, because, you know, we were offered through these three different verticals. So, I mean, the annualized margin would remain around this, while on a quarter-to-quarter, there will be obviously difference in the margin depending upon the seats which have come up for occupancy, seats which have come up for billing.
Got it, sir. So you are saying about net profit margins and not EBITDA margins.
Yeah, so earlier what I explained to you is broadly the EBITDA margins, the net profit margins remain around, let's say, 17-18%. depending on a rental business side, on an average, if you look at on a consolidated basis, it remains around 15% to 16%.
Got it. Thank you, and all the best.
Please.
The next question is from the line of Shreyansh Jain from Electrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, please.
Yeah, congratulations on a great set of numbers. So, I have three questions. First one is regarding our design and build out division team and the status of the merger that is pending. And what was the basis of the valuation of the 545 crores?
So the merger status is that it is pending for an NOC from the SEBI as of now. We are expecting, you know, I mean, based on the discussions happened, there are no more clarifications, I guess, which is required. All the information clarifications on the scheme have been submitted well. I mean, we are just following up very aggressively and, you know, rigorously, and expecting any time soon. With regards to the valuation, at that point of time, obviously, the valuation was derived based on the contracts in hand, based on the business insight, and based on the projections that were created at that point of time, which were vetted by the registered valuer, a merchant banker. So we taken two reports, one from a merchant banker and one from a registered valuer, and those reports were used as a base for creating the valuation for both the respective companies and arrive at the swap ratio.
Okay, and what is your team size in the DNB division?
The team size in the division is more than 40 people, and that includes your architects, that includes your designers, and also includes your sales teams part of it.
Okay, got it, sir. And second question regarding 8 Design of Anitha division, why have we only invested 76% and the investment of 25 crores that was said, I think, somewhere? Who did that and who owns the remaining 24%?
So, as of now, you know, the White Eight Design was an existing company which was owned by young entrepreneurs who were already doing this, you know, furniture manufacturing business. They have an engineering background and they've been doing very well in their business, particularly on the residential side and on the hospitality sector side. And, you know, once we saw the opportunity, because, you know, we used them to source some of our, you know, furniture for our office infrastructure requirement. And we saw the kind of margins that they were able to, you know, generate, and we saw the kind of quality that they were able to generate and the timeline they were able to convert the delivery to. So we have acquired 76% from them, and the initial capital which was invested was 5 crore rupees in the business. There was no secondary sale. This was a primary investment which was made into the company to enhance their existing capacity. So they were operating through a small manufacturing setup. That manufacturing setup was enhanced now to the 3-acre land, 3-acre area that we are now present at Fusungi. And, you know, that 76% is acquired accordingly. The balance is owned by them and some of the stakeholders. And with regards to the investment, the total investment, including also the working capital, was envisaged at about 25 crore. But the capex which was invested is in about 5 to 6 crores that has been invested by EFC India Limited, the major shareholder of the company.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. All the best for future quarters.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The next question is from the line of Krishna Shah from Ashika Stockbroking. Please go ahead.
Oh, firstly, Mr. Nikhil, congratulations on a great set of numbers. So I just wanted to understand the market at this point. What is the kind of competition? What are the kind of players that you're facing currently in the geographies that you're present?
I mean, the managed office and the co-working business is getting crowded, as you may can see now also. And with regards to the competition, yes, everybody has to create their own position in the market. Everybody has to create their own niche in the market. And we've been able to create one
for us. I think that's going to
Sorry, sir, there is some disturbance.
Yeah, I think at the moderator level, please take care of that. Yeah, so I was trying to say that in terms of competition, yes, the market is crowded, but the significant players are limited, as you could know that the players who are independent players who offer services across the major cities of the country are pretty limited. There are a lot of regional players, and obviously they offer a lot of competition when it comes to the sales. But as we have explained in past that, you know, our MD's vision is very clear that we need to create a larger catchment area. We need to work and operate at an efficiency where we are able to cater to the largest customer base that we can. And that makes us in a position where we are able to kind of sustain the kind of occupancy that we are, you know, referring to, which is an average occupancy of 90%. So, you know, our MD is very clear that, you know, at the end of the day, you are offering an office infrastructure to somebody as a solution. You are taking care of those assets on behalf of the businessman enterprises, and we have to make it reasonable. We have to make it quality conscious, and we have to offer them the best set of combinations that we can offer on the pricing and on the quality. And that's what we've been trying to do for all the years, and that's where we keep working towards. And I think all these integrations are going to help us in a great way. And that kind of puts us a little differently than the competition, because as in the market, probably we are one of the, or maybe I can say proudly that we are the only one who has an integrated model. So I think competition is there. It will remain. There is no business which will remain devoid of competition. But one has to create their own positioning, and that's what we are trying to achieve.
Got it, sir. Got it. My second question is in terms of the average area per site that we see has increased from 25,000 to 30,000 per square feet in the last quarter to 35 and 40,000 in this quarter. So does this mean that we are acquiring larger office spaces, and how does that affect our occupancy levels, given we are looking at 90%. So do we see any challenges in terms of, you know, leasing these out, the larger spaces?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, you know, there are obviously benefits in acquiring the larger is the economy of scale that we are able to achieve. We are, yes, acquiring, or rather acquiring leasehold rights over the larger area. There are a couple of reasons to it, if I can break it down. One is that, you know, we have now established in all those big cities very well. So we understand the micro markets of each of the cities very well. And so our confidence of selling or filling those spaces in those micro markets in those cities have gone up significantly. Our sales teams understand the psyche of that business, psyche of that market, and, you know the broker network that has been created, the marketing network that has been created. So we are now able to make use of getting a larger space, get better economy in your sourcing the property, because if you source a larger space, obviously your ability to negotiate is better, your ability to, you know, kind of carry out the fit out at the best price becomes better. So that kind of helps you in doing a lot of efficiency building on the other end of it. To your question about our ability to fill and our ability to maintain the occupancy. So like I explained, and since we understand this market now very well, with our presence there for a significant period of around in almost each city for more than 5 years, we are able to understand the market pretty well, and we are only, you know, kind of getting ourselves properties where the micro markets which are doing very good and are likely to doing good for next, you know, 3 to 5 years. So, you know, as you can appreciate, in each city, the micro markets also keep shifting. But, you know, that is an estimate, and that's the kind of, you know, business calls that every, you know, player in our business will have to keep to understand that where the market is going to get, you know, saturated or melted, get rather set, you know, focused in out of the entire city. So I hope you, I've answered your question.
Sorry to interrupt. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question for today's conference call. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nikhil Bhutta, full-time director of EFC India Limited, for their closing comments.
First of all, thank you everyone for joining this early morning call, and we are really thankful for all of your lot of continued support. We appreciate that your engagement with us is really helping us to and encouraging us to do much better and better every quarter. As we move forward, we remain committed to driving growth and delivering value to all our shareholders. Should you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us, and have a great weekend and a great Diwali week coming week. And lots of good wishes and good health to all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of EFC India Limited, that concludes today's session. If there are any questions that have remained unanswered due to paucity of time, request you to kindly send us the same to compliance@efclimited.in. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect the call. Thank you.